Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Tuesday, January 26, 2021. Thank you so much for joining me. The title of today's podcast, IMF World Economic Outlook. That was released today, so we're going to go over some of that. That's going to be the main theme of today's discussion. We'll read some of that report, some of the highlights, what it means. Are they going to be correct? What are some of their assumptions? And we'll have that discussion. Obviously going to cover a little bit of market performance. The Federal Reserve FOMC, the Federal Open Market Committee, is meeting today and tomorrow. And of course, tomorrow on Wednesday, Chairman of the Fed, Jay Powell, will come out, give his press conference, answer some questions. None of them will be hard pressing. Even if they are, he's going to dodge them. But chances are the Federal Reserve will maintain interest rates at their current level. And I'm sure he will sound very dovish and accommodative because he does not want to upturn the apple cart. He does not want to upset the crackheads on Wall Street. It's just that simple. So this is going to be another expression or another statement by Jay Powell that we are not even thinking about increasing interest rates. You know, if you're a student of economic history or just have been paying attention since quantitative easing has been implemented since the Great Financial Crisis, you'll remember the taper tantrum that occurred. And that was just simply the Federal Reserve saying, okay, we've been doing this experiment called quantitative easing for a few years now. I think it's time to step back, get you out of the wheelchair, put you on your own 2 feet, give you some crutches. We're going to start tapering a little bit. And Wall Street had a conniption back then. They threw a tantrum. That's what this is. These are grown adults throwing a tantrum because, God forbid, they have to go out and innovate and actually produce something as opposed to just use all of this cheap, funny money to prop everything up so they can financially engineer their stock prices higher. God forbid they actually have to innovate and produce something. This is why this country is on a very dangerous, slippery slope. So he doesn't want to upset the markets, and chances are he's not going to, at least in rhetoric. Now, whether the markets say that's enough, or whether this whole blow-off top or whatever mania we are in just comes to an end because it has exhausted itself, nobody knows when that day is going to come, but it will. And this will be one for the history books. It doesn't always have to be an external shock to the system. It doesn't always have to be some type of black swan that nobody sees coming that just catches everybody off guard to end these types of run-ups in the market. It's just exhaustion. So your guess is as good as mine when that day will come, but it will. And I feel bad for so many people because they're just not going to see it coming. They have no experience with the bear market. They have no idea what a blow-off top is. They weren't trading during 07, 08. They weren't trading during the dot-com bust. They just have no context whatsoever. And a lot of people thought they were geniuses during the dot-com era, and they went bust. And unfortunately, that's likely going to happen again, and probably in even bigger proportions today than then, because this is just the everything bubble this time. It's not just in equities. It's in the debt markets. It's in every market virtually under the sun. And just wait till inflation really starts to take off. So we'll hear from the Federal Reserve. I also mentioned yesterday during our podcast with respect to the Great Reset, President Xi of China mentioning a new Cold War and wanting that not to be the case. And of course, that's the right rhetoric. And I'm not going to get into that here today, but I just want to sort of set this aside because it is something I want to cover either later this week or into next week, because this isn't going away anytime soon. But this is just rich coming from this guy who has, you know, concentration or re-education camps in his country, who is literally building islands in the South China Sea so he can do some island hopping and get closer to other territories, flying military planes over Taiwan. I think that happened last week and this week. So it's really rich for him to come out and say that we don't want a new Cold War, yet all of the things that he is doing. So I want to talk about that because whether or not there is a new Cold War or not, or that's going to have huge consequences for the global economy, for global supply chains. So we'll get to the IMF, but first let's get some market performance out of the way. We have the dollar index trading just slightly lower from yesterday's podcast at 90.17 on the dollar index. Markets were again down today, but overnight futures trading, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average down about 0.2%. The S&P 500 is flat, and the NASDAQ 100 is gaining 0.6%. We are in the midst of earnings season, and there have been some pretty strong beats, obviously, to the upside. Now, I don't know if this is just because market analysts have just had lower projections, because that's just how they want to play the game. It's, you set a low bar, it's easier to jump over the bar to say, oh, well, we beat market expectations. Or if there's really this type of dynamic organic growth out there in the market, that will remain to be seen. But nonetheless, some market beats, and I imagine the NASDAQ 100 is up in overnight trading right now on the news. The sort of the continuation of after-hours news with respect to Microsoft and some other tech stocks. We have the Japanese markets up about 0.4%. A reversal across the pond today. It was a big down day yesterday, up in the green today. And the Australian cash trade is currently in the red slightly. We have commodity prices gaining a little bit today on the back of on supply draws. So it was more than anticipated, was taken out of the supply, so prices came up. We have WTI at $52.99, Brent at $56.30, natural gas $2.67. Gold and silver had a choppy day, but still relatively close to where we were yesterday. Gold is at $1,850 an ounce, silver $25.44 an ounce spot prices, and Uncle Sam's 10-year junk note is yielding 1.04%, so also little changed from yesterday's podcast. So yesterday we also talked about, during the Great Reset, this new buzzword of stakeholder capitalism, because these are going to be the things, the phrases, the words that we are likely going to continue to hear throughout this year and maybe even longer than that. Of course, this was in their back pocket. They were talking about the Great Reset last year. Now it is the theme of this year's World Economic Forum Summit in Davos, Switzerland. And today there was a panel discussion. I did not catch it this morning, but it was a panel titled Stakeholder Capitalism. And on the panel, you had Kristalina Georgieva, who is the IMF Managing Director. You have Chrystia Freeland, Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, which Canada is not in good shape either, folks. We have Mark Benioff, the CEO of Salesforce, CRM software company. Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock. Yes, the same BlackRock that is the money manager, if you will, for the Federal Reserve with all of their emergency facilities and special purpose vehicles. Yes, that same BlackRock, because they have former members of the Federal Reserve who are bigwigs within BlackRock, go figure. You have Brian Moynihan, the CEO, Bank of America. Yes, the same Bank of America that screws over its customers, gets caught and pays pennies on the dollar. And then you have Gillian Tett, a journalist out of the Financial Times. I tend to like Gillian Tett. I mean, she will push back a little bit. She's very knowledgeable, in my opinion. But you got to get the media involved in all of this too, right? You have to have somebody in the mainstream media who's going to push these words. Now, I don't know if Ms. Tett will push and be an advocate for stakeholder capitalism, but I imagine the Financial Times will be, so we'll keep an eye on that. But isn't this amazing? Because we talked about this yesterday on the Great Reset with Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Forum, and I guess the father or the creator of stakeholder capitalism and his definition thereof, which really doesn't pass the smell test. Right? I mean, he's talking about, well, we have to make corporations the trustees of society to do the right things. Well, you want to put the CEO of Bank of America, is he supposed to be the trustee? Is this supposed to be somebody we're supposed to trust to manage everything? And if he messes up, who's going to hold him to account? Do we, the people, get to fire him? I mean, they talk about social contracts and all of the stakeholder capitalism in the Great Reset. Do we get to see the contract? Do we get to sign on the dotted lines? Or is this just, no, we're going to do this because we think this is best for you. Sit there, shut up, and take it. What are they going to do? Because there was a lot of contradiction within what Mr. Schwab was putting out there. He wants to seemingly complain about wealth and income inequality, which is a concern, there's no question about it, but then he wants to also praise central banks and world governments for all of their quote-unquote stimulus policies, which are creating and contributing further to these income and wealth inequalities. So does he not understand this? Or is he just fine with it because these are the people that he brings to the World Economic Forum? These are the keynote speakers. These are the people on these various panel discussions. It's not you and me. It's not the average Joe. It's not the small business owner. It's these people who are already at the helm, who have already proven time and time again that most of them shouldn't be there. Yet these are, I guess, the going to be the people who continue to run the ship. And I just do not think that those who have gotten us into this mess are going to be the people who get us out of it. The other thing that I don't think that a lot of people understand is coming up with these other words, right? Like stakeholder capitalism. If he really understood what free market capitalism was and is, then that's what he should be advocating for. Because he talked about, in a separate article, Mr. Schwab, about shareholder capitalism, state capitalism, and then, of course, his stakeholder capitalism. Well, if you adopted free market capitalism, you would have what he's really advocating for. He just doesn't understand this. Or he does, and he's trying to use stakeholder capitalism as a way to sort of rebrand state capitalism, which is what we really have today across the globe. And state capitalism is the merger of big government with big corporations. That's fascism by definition, but you can call it communism, socialism, because it really doesn't matter, because the end point of this, the destination, is a decimated economy, and with it, a decimated body politic and a decimated society. That's where those things, that's where those systems take their people. That's where they take societies. He's just, what I think, just trying to put a different spin on state capitalism and saying it's stakeholder capitalism, and this is how we're going to do it. We're going to put different faces out there to sort of soften the blow. But we'll see. Perhaps I'm wrong, but I don't think so, because these are the people who got us into this mess now. But this is on the IMF's homepage, stakeholder capitalism, basically advertising this panel discussion. So we're going to go through some of this. We'll see how far we get. Can always save it for another day. But this is the World Economic Outlook update from the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. Although recent vaccine approvals have raised hopes of a turnaround in the pandemic later this year, renewed waves and new variants of the virus pose concerns for the outlook. Amid exceptional uncertainty, the global economy is projected to grow 5.5% in 2021 and 4.2% in 2022. The 2021 forecast is revised upwards by 0.3 percentage points relative to the previous forecast, reflecting expectations of a vaccine-powered strengthening of activity later in the year and additional policy support in a few large economies. The projected growth recovery this year follows a severe collapse in 2020 that has had acute adverse impacts on women, youth, the poor, the informally employed, and those who work in contact-intensive sectors. The global growth contraction for 2020 is estimated at negative 3.5%, 0.9 percentage points higher than projected in the previous forecast, again reflecting stronger-than-expected momentum in the second half of 2020. The strength of the recovery is projected to vary significantly across countries, depending on access to medical interventions, effectiveness of policy support, exposure to cross-country spillovers, and structural characteristics entering the crisis. It continues, policy actions should ensure effective support until the recovery is firmly underway, with an emphasis on advancing key imperatives of raising potential output, ensuring participatory growth that benefits all, and accelerating the transition to lower carbon dependence. As noted in the October 2020 World Economic Outlook, the WEO, a green investment push coupled with initially moderate but steadily rising carbon prices, would yield needed emissions reductions while supporting the recovery from the pandemic recession. You get that? They want to push carbon taxes. That's what they're just not going to call it carbon taxes. They're going to call it a carbon price. Well, who's going to have to eat this? Well, perhaps to get this thing started, they might push it off onto a lot of corporations and businesses, large and small. Well, what are those folks going to do with it? They're either going to eat the cost increases, so it's going to squeeze their margins, or they're going to pass the price hikes onto the consumer. This is not good in either direction. But of course, they'll say it's completely justified because it's going quote unquote green. This is what was discussed in the Great Reset. This is something I warned about last year when the Prime Minister of New Zealand basically announced, well, we're COVID-free down here. Now we're going to announce a climate crisis. Remember when I said this a couple months ago? I said, pay attention to this. This is going to be the new thing, right? This is going to be the next crisis that is front and center. Red alert, red alert, red alert. This is where it's coming from. This is what it's going to be. I mean, I'm not really patting myself on the back here because they've made this plain to see. They've always been talking about green technologies and going green and the Green New Deal and all this stuff, but it was sort of on the back burner. But they have to keep their momentum of all of these behavioral changes, of all of these lockdowns. They got to keep all of this momentum of control in place. And the next thing that they're going to use, if these other variants don't do the trick, whether it's the Brazilian variant or the UK variant or the South African variant of COVID-19, if that doesn't do the trick, then they're going to push more green investment. And look how they say it. Coupled with initially moderate but steadily rising carbon prices. What's their limit? How high are they going to go? How much economic output is going to have to basically halt, cease production to meet these criteria? Or how much more money are these corporations, small and large, going to have to pull out of their pocket to pay for this? They're always short on the details, but when they come out, they're never good. Strong multilateral cooperation is required to bring the pandemic under control everywhere. Such efforts include bolstering funding for the COVAX facility to accelerate access to vaccines for all countries, ensuring universal distribution of vaccines, and facilitating access to therapeutics at affordable prices for all. Many countries, particularly low-income developing economies, entered the crisis with high debt that is set to rise further during the pandemic. The global community will need to continue working closely to ensure adequate access to international liquidity for these countries. Where sovereign debt is unsustainable, eligible countries should work with creditors to restructure their debt under the common framework agreed by the G20, the largest 20 economies. So, high debt loads were here before the crisis, and they are even worse now. Because, as we know, because all of our genius policymakers, they tell us all the time, the way to solve a problem caused by too much debt is to add even more debt. That's the solution. That's what they do, and that's exactly what they're doing. And of course, as I stated earlier and many times before, this is a contributing factor to the income and wealth gap. 10% of the population owns 90% of the equities in this country. 1% owns about 50% of the equities in this country. The bottom 50% own basically none. So how is this really benefiting the entire country? That's right, it's not. We continue to see 900,000 Americans filing for unemployment benefits over the past couple of weeks. I mean, mid-800,000 to high 930,000 a couple weeks ago. I mean, come on. Food bank lines still in existence. Tens of billions of dollars in back rent. Isn't that interesting, too, because you're starting to see some bankers now say, oh, well, this whole work from home thing, I don't know if it makes sense. Did you come across this earlier today? They're starting to come out. And the reason, in my opinion, that the banks are starting to say this is because all of that paper that they have on their books is all of a sudden not looking too good. And you got to get back into the office, because if you're not back in the office, then they're going to sell it. And if they don't need that real estate, guess what's going to happen to those prices, and guess what's going to happen to all that paper that the banks are holding with respect to commercial real estate. That's right, connect the dots. It's not too difficult. So they want people back in the office so they can keep paying rent so these loans don't become non-performing loans. Okay? It's always for them. So here are some projections just by numbers. Here is the latest World Economic Outlook growth projections. We're just going to highlight some of these key areas. For the world output total for 2020, it's an estimate of negative 3.5%. Obviously, next year, as we stated at the top of this, 5.5%, and then decreasing to 4.2% in the year 2022. For the United States, a negative 3.4% for 2020, increasing to 5.1% this year in 2021, and then reducing down to 2.5% in the year 2022. For the euro area, a contraction of 7.2% this year, 2020, excuse me. And then for this year, 2021, growth of 4.2% and then reducing to 3.6% in the year 2022. And then for China, expectations for 2020 come in at 2.3%. For 2021 at 8.1%, so a big rebound there, and then decreasing back to 5.6% in 2022. But an interesting one that I want to talk about here is Nigeria. And Nigeria can sort of be considered a proxy for many other countries that sort of fit this mold, if you will. So we have a contraction, negative 3.2% for 2020, increasing to a positive 1.5% growth rate in 2021, and then further growth of 2.5% in 2022. Now, it's one thing to say in the United States of America, we have a growth rate in 2022 at 2.5%, because it's based off of such a large number to begin with, $21 trillion, basically. Okay, so that still represents a pretty sizable number. But when you're talking about a country such as Nigeria, which is a growing economy, hopefully, most definitely the most populous country in Africa, and has very strong demographics, meaning there's a lot of young people in Nigeria. For them to only be growing at 1.5% or even 2.5%, I don't know if that's going to cut it. And what I'm getting at is this going to lead to more social and political unrest? Because if young people do not have opportunities to grow, to start families, to start businesses, to find work, what do you think is going to happen? It's one thing if you have an old population and things aren't great. How much energy do they have to take to the streets and to sort of bring about some sort of change? But young people, on the other hand, full of energy, want to demand change, have the rest of their lives ahead of them, it's a different ballgame. And that's the case in Nigeria and so many other countries. And if there is not strong economic growth and opportunities, what we have been seeing in 2019, in 2020, and what we're likely going to continue to see this year, that might have been a walk in the park to the types of protests and riots and potential government overthrows that are coming down the pike. 1.5%, 2.5% on a country that should be growing much faster than that, I just think is going to be extremely problematic on a number of fronts. But obviously, time will tell. We still have a few minutes here, so I do want to cover a couple other items within the IMF's report here. So, this is titled here, Lingering Concerns. However, surging infections in late 2020, including from new variants of the virus, renewed lockdowns, logistical problems with vaccine distribution, and uncertainty about take-up are important counterpoints to the favorable news. Much remains to be done on the health and economic policy fronts to limit persistent damage from the severe contraction of 2020 and ensure a sustained economic recovery. Now, they also have a graph here that notes world GDP growth, and we can see that it peaked at about 4%, slightly above 4% in 2017, around 2018, and has been steadily declining. Of course, fell off a cliff last year, but nonetheless, this is just, again, further evidence of what I have been discussing on the Capitol News since 2019, that everything was rolling over before COVID-19. Along comes the virus, and it makes everything justifiable. And that's extremely concerning, because we can have these types of growth rates, but it's not because there's actually growth. It's because there's a lot of money printing. That's all there is to it. There's more debt in the system. Debt does not equal growth. But that's what they will have you believe. You have to understand, look, we're at these are the base effects that I talk about here all the time, too. When you're at a very low level, which we have been, it's easy to beat expectations, and it's easy to show a big rebound because you're working from such a low starting point. But GDP, which is, of course, what they're basing all of this off of, is nothing more than an arithmetic equation. It's government spending, it's investment, it's consumption, and it's net exports. And depending on the country, maybe net exports is a positive boost to GDP or it's a negative drag. Of course, here in the U.S., because we import more than we export, it's a negative drag. But nonetheless, that's all you're doing. You're just adding up these numbers. And if you can increase government spending, well, guess what? You're going to increase GDP, or it's not going to go down as far as it otherwise would have in the absence of those quote-unquote stimulus programs. So it's not going to surprise me to have some sort of big jump back up, but it's also not going to surprise me if it doesn't happen because we continue to see further economic deterioration when we look at the jobs numbers every week here. And then lastly, and there's a couple other things I'd like to get to at some point because, I mean, they obviously go into some detail. The report's about 11 pages long. You can find it easily, imf.org. I'll try to link it to my write-up on thecapitalnews.com and wherever else you're going to find or listen to these podcasts under my write-up. You can hopefully just hot link it and find the report right there. And then another key point here, because these people, it's never enough. Additional fiscal policy support set to boost activity in some countries, but most are expected to experience lower deficits in 2021. We'll see about that. The sizable fiscal support announced for 2021 in some countries, including most recently in the United States and Japan, together with the unlocking of next-generation EU funds, European Union funds, will help lift economic activity among advanced economies with favorable spillovers to trading partners. However, as noted in the January 2021 Fiscal Monitor update, fiscal deficits in most countries are projected to decline in 2021 as revenues rise and expenditures decline automatically with the recovery. Now, we'll see about that. I mean, in this country, going from $28 trillion to $49.5 trillion in 4 years, I don't think our deficits are going down anytime soon. And as I stated yesterday, per Chuck Schumer's remarks in his interview with MSNBC's Rachel Maddow, the Democrats are looking at reconciliation, a parliamentary tactic to pass budgets through the Senate with a simple majority of 51 senators. So they basically have it, all Democrats on board. The two independents, Bernie Sanders and Senator King of Maine, who always pretty much go along with the Democrats. And of course, Vice President Kamala Harris would be the tie-breaking vote. And I imagine on some of these, they would get a couple Republicans too. So if that's the case, there is going to be a lot more spending. It's going to be piecemeal, but $1.9 trillion can get passed pretty quickly piecemeal. More spending here, a little bit more stimulus there, more checks out to these people, whatever the case is going to be. And then anything with respect to the Green New Deal, anything with respect to infrastructure, healthcare, they are just getting started. The Republicans pushed things through when Trump came in and swept everything. The Democrats are going to do the same thing. Don't be naive. Don't be stupid to think that just because there's opposition that now the Republicans are going to grow a spine and complain and be all concerned about debts and deficits, that this is going to stop anything. May they slow it down? Yeah, maybe they will, but that's all it is. They're just slowing it down. Instead of driving off the cliff at 100 miles an hour, we're going over at 50 miles an hour. We're still going off the cliff. Good luck. That's what's happening. That's the Great Reset. We're going off the cliff. But that is the IMF World Economic Outlook. We'll continue having some conversations on this. I'll continue to go through it. Tomorrow, obviously, the highlight will most likely be the Federal Reserve's decision and how they are reading the tea leaves and how they want the markets to interpret what they're saying. So we'll focus on that. And then, obviously, Thursday will be initial jobless claims and some other economic updates. And then we'll either see what transpires elsewhere on the planet and have further discussions, either a weekly wrap-up or maybe go over President Xi, the Cold War and what that might mean. So there you have it, IMF World Economic Outlook. Better than was anticipated previously, 5.5%. We'll see if that comes to fruition. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Carides. Godspeed.